through Rabbi Yerachmiel's introduction, and I come back for more year after year. I mean, you've left them with the impression that Pashut the Gadol B'Yisrael is coming to talk to them today. How will I ever rise to the great expectations that you have engendered within these poor B'nai Torah over here? But I'm going to try. That's for sure, I'm going to try.
Okay, the fact is that you talk about 50 years ago,
Rabbi Gold came to learn in Eretz Yisrael. For these guys, 50 years ago is ancient history. Not only that, it's ancient history they don't even read about. It's the same kind of ancient history as the establishment of the State of Israel 60 years ago, that chances are they don't have a clue in the world. The power, the drama, the dynamics of Klal Yisrael at that moment in time. Unless you had somebody who talked to you, somebody who told you something about it, the most dramatic and most powerful story, most probably in history, is the story of the last 60, and maybe we can make it 63 years. There is no other people on the face of this earth that have had a history as we've had in the last 60 years. What has happened over here in Eretz Yisrael is unparalleled and unmatched in the annals of mankind. There has not been another people that, after, for all intents and purposes, an absence of 2,000 years, returns to their ancestral home and come out of the graves of Auschwitz to come back over here. And 3 years after the worst Churban that ever befell any people on the face of this earth, they establish a country, a state, an army. It's unbelievable. No people has ever done it. And nobody wanted us. They still don't want us. They'll do whatever they can in order to get rid of us. You know what the last 60 years? The last 60 years is a story of Hashgacha Pratis. This country lives on Nisim. And not Nisim Nistarim, it's Nisim Gluyim. The establishment of the state was not an act of David Ben Gurion or anybody else. This was an act of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what I want to do with you for the next 50 minutes, if I can contain myself and can control myself within 50 minutes, is to be Mekayim and Mitzvah Saseh Min HaTorah. How do you like that? Don't think it's Bittelsman. It's a Mitzvah Saseh Min HaTorah. Thank you. What is the Mitzvah Saseh? The Share Tshuva L'Rabbeinu Yonah. By the way, it's a great sefer to learn. You have to be ready for it. But the Share Tshuva L'Rabbeinu Yonah says the following. Da, you should know, ki ha-ma'alot ha-eyonot, the greatest virtues have been given over to us in the form of positive commandments. Ha-ma'alot ha-eyonot nimsumu lanu b'mitzvot ha-sei. What are the ma'alot ha-eyonot? What are the great virtues? Ma'alot ha-bechira, free will, choice, u'bochar tobatayim. Ma'alot Talmud Torah, the virtue of Talmud Torah, shenema v'dibar tobam, it's a virtue. And that virtue is translated by the Rebbe Shem into a mitzvah saseh. U'ma'alat lechet v'darkei Hashem, the ideal that man is supposed to walk in the footsteps of God, v'halachto v'drachov, imitato dei. U'ma'alus shlemes habitachon, have absolute faith and trust. And then, two things. Uma'alot hidbonein b'gedulat Hashem, the virtue of thinking about, pondering, meditating the greatness of Hashem, shenema v'yodato hayom v'hashevoto levavecho ki Hashem hu elokim. And then, oh, this is the mitzvah we're going to fulfill. Uma'alot zichron chasadav, the virtue of remembering his kindness, v'hidbonein behem. And think about it. Yes. There's only one way to be midbonein b'chazdei Hashem. You have to know the Chazdei Hashem. The Chazdei Hashem, you're not going to find in the Tesis. You're going to find the Chazdei Hashem in the history, certainly in the history of the last 60 years of Klal Yisrael. And when it comes to the vidbonein, to ponder and meditate Chazdei Hashem, here the Shari Tshuva says, Shenema, as it says, Zacharta et Kol HaDerech, you should remember the whole way, the whole journey that was taken by the Jewish people throughout all of history. V'nema v'yodata im levavecho, you shall know in your heart, ki kasher yiyaser ish et b'no, as a man chastises his son, Hashem Elokecho miyaschecho, the Rabbi Yishon is the one who chastises you. V'david amar, David said, v'yidboninu b'chazei Hashem, think, ponder, meditate. God, there are so many chassadim. I just was talking in the shir I said this morning, I was talking about late October of 1942. That's more than 60 years ago. At that particular moment in time, now here's a bit of information. I thought I knew that period in history, hour by hour. Rommel, the Desert Fox, German forces have crossed nearly all of North Africa, and they stopped at a place called El Alamein. El Alamein is not far from Alexandria, that's Egypt, and they're getting ready for the great thrust. Hitler, Yimach Shema, is on his way to Eretz Yisrael. As Dessler says, the end of Chelek Aleph of the Michta Melio, he says that a parallel at the same time, Hitler has undertaken Operation Barbarossa, which is the invasion of Russia. The worst mistake he ever made. And here it is, he's on his way. He's wiping Russia out, and there's a little battle starting at a place called Stalingrad, you understand? So the Rav Dessler, the Michta Melio, says that the plan, the ultimate plan was through Russia to Iran, and come against Eretz Yisrael from one side. Rommel is going to come against Eretz Yisrael from North Africa, and Eretz Yisrael, the Yishuv of 400,000 Jews, will be crushed. The British, you understand, our good friends, the British, had already given instructions to all of their forces in Egypt and in Palestine to fall back into Mesopotamia. They were going to leave the Yishuv, 400,000 Jews, totally unprotected, you understand? Not only that, those Rishoyim know how to beat Rishoyim. There were 1,500 vehicles that belonged to Jews in Palestine, and they prohibited the sale of petrol. No petrol to be sold to Jews. You know what they're doing? They're running off to safety in Mesopotamia. And by the way, they had to cross the Euphrates, and they didn't have bridges. So a few Yiddish kept, you understand, some Palestinian Jews. By the way, in my days, when I was growing up, there were only, the only people in the world who were Palestinians were Jews. I used to go to Pushkin, 42nd Street, Palestine, gift for Palestine. You guys wouldn't even know it. All right. Anyway, strange things happening. Hitler is about to crush Eretz Yisrael. The British are running as fast as they can. And he seems to be stopped at El Alamein, and he seems to be stopped at Stalingrad. And then the Allies fight back. Montgomery pushes Hitler back at El Alamein. In Stalingrad, the Russians stop him dead in his tracks. Hashgacha! At the gates of Eretz Yisrael begins the defeat of Hitler. So then I find out, fella sitting, she says, and I go, I work for the American Army. We made a study. And you know what we found out? We found out that the night of the Battle of El Alamein, Rommel's forces were overcome with a terrible case of diarrhea. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers were pushed sick. I never knew that. Why does the Hashgacha work in strange ways? They had shigellosis. You ever heard of shigellosis? Well, now you heard of shigellosis. How does this happen? First, it was, they ate something that wasn't good in Nebuch. You know, the German army is... I had been learning this morning in Shir how the angel of death comes down on Sancheriv the night before the great battle for Yerushalayim. Wipes them out. Shigalosis. Yizboininu chazdei Hashem. I was never able to fulfill the mitzvah of being mitbonein in that chesed because I didn't know that chesed. What we have to do is try and get into the next little while as many of the chazdei Hashem as possible. The main ones of the course of the last 60 years. Now there is a problem. The problem is that after many years, my watch stopped. I don't have a watch. If somebody doesn't give me a watch, you guys, I will only know that it's time for the shiur to be over when it's shkia. Somebody give me a watch. No, they get me nervous. I need one of the... That! Nope. I can see it. Good. It's about 2 minutes after... 2 minutes after three. So first of all... there is a an unbelievable heroic part of Jewish history that just came to the fore and became a topic of the discussion just a week ago. And even before that, about a month ago, I started looking for more information on this and on the internet. Boy, is there information. At the end of the Second World War, there were hundreds of thousands of Jews that remained in Europe. Many of them remained in the same camps in which they'd been held during the war. Nobody wanted them. The United States of America agreed to accept 100,000 Jews. That was America's great contribution. Didn't do a thing during the course of the war. Canada, of course, was asked to take in 20,000 Jewish children during the course of the Second World War, and the chutzpah, we have no place. There's enough place today in Canada for another billion people, but there was no place for 20,000 Jewish children. And at the end of the war, there were hundreds of thousands of Jews that had absolutely no place in the world to go. So you know what began? One of the greatest movements of population in history. Jews started using every means of conveyance to get to the Mediterranean, to get onto an unseaworthy boat. Just take us there, it's Israel. And of course, His Majesty's Navy, that ruled Britannia, ruled the seas, sent their navy out to stop Jews from coming to Eretz Israel. I mean, when I hear today, you know, yes, somebody, do you plan on living here? No, I don't like the lifestyle in Eretz Israel. Israel's not for me, and I'll come visit, and maybe when I retire, I'll come for 2 months in the summer or something of that sort. Jews were clamoring to get into Eretz Israel. The only hope for them in the whole world was Eretz Israel. They were Moshe Nefesh Marish in order to get to these shores. I was talking about this in another shiur last week. One of the fellows here says, Rabbi Gold, I served on one of the boats. By the way, why was it a topic of discussion? Because a fellow by the name of Yossi Harel, who was the commander of the Exodus, there was a boat called the Exodus, 1947. The British sent it back to Germany. You understand? Sent the boat with 4,500 people and sent it back to Germany. So this fellow says, Rabbi Gold, I was on one of the boats. And the papers already reported that there were 60 boats that were used during those 3 years that brought over 100,000 Jews crowded into these boats in order to get to Eretz Israel. We complain, I understand, after a 9 3/4 hours El Al, you understand, from New York to Tel Aviv, and the seat wasn't good, the movie was rotten, the food was not edible, and here we're talking about hundreds of thousands of Jews going through great suffering in order to get to Eretz Israel. So anyway, this fellow was on the was on one of these boats. He had been in the American Navy, and it seems what happened was in Baltimore they bought Teddy Roosevelt's old flagship. You know, in the days of Teddy Roosevelt, they didn't have Air Force One for the president. There was no Air Force. There was no air. There was no force. There were no planes. But he did have Teddy Roosevelt's the presidential ship. They bought the presidential ship for $30,000. And they started across the Atlantic, and the boiler room blew up. They spent a month till they crossed the Atlantic. They fixed the boat themselves, got to Marseille, put about 4,000 Jews into that little boat, and they ran the British blockade to Eretz Israel. This was a story of great heroism. And then one day, Pashit, you know what happens? One day, Eretz Yisrael becomes the property of Klal Yisrael, all of a sudden. Did it happen so quickly? I tell you, one of the things that for which I thank the Rabbeinu Shalom, that I was old enough to be aware of what was going on during all of those years, because there haven't been years like that in Jewish history. I remember the vote in the United Nations. When was the vote in the United Nations? Let's go, guys. Huh? October 29th, 1947. October 29th, 1947, when the decision was made on the partition of Palestine into a Jewish and an Arab state. Do you understand the simcha that overtook the entire Jewish world? The simcha that overtook the Jewish world? I will never forget. I think I've said it every year. I will never forget, I was 13 years old. It was, you can figure it out, I don't care, you can figure out anything you want. The establishment of the state was 2 weeks before my bar mitzvah. And I remember walking to shul, we davened, we lived in Williamsburg, we davened in Yeshiva Torah Vadas at 207 Wilson Street. Understand? 207, what, he lives in Williamsburg? Huh?
Torah Vadas?
When I was in Torah Vadas, it was really, you know, that was Baruch HaTov Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehyah Bedvaro. I remember that Friday, May 14th, 1948, Hey Iyar, the fact is that the British were going to be leaving Eretz Yisrael that night at midnight. The High Commissioner was going to be leaving by boat from Haifa, and of course they, so that there should not be Chil Shabbos, they moved up the announcement of the establishment of the state to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I remember coming into shul, there was such fear. Because for 3 years there had been fighting going on in the streets of Eretz Yisrael. It was a battlefield, an absolute battlefield. And there were terrible losses. But I remember walking into shul. It was mincha time. You could see there was worry, there was pain, there was a degree of elation. And then I remember somebody running into shul to say, President Truman recognized the State of Israel. I get choked up every time I think of it. That whole, there were 500 people in shul. Most probably 200-300 had numbers on their arms. The outburst of joy was unparalleled. I have no patience for some guy who's going to tell me, yontiv, shmantiv, huntiv, yeah, what is it? It don't mean nothing. What are you talking about? Only somebody wasn't there then thinks it's nothing. Only somebody who always had a place where to live thinks it was nothing. Only somebody who's comfortable his whole life and didn't suffer in a concentration camp and wasn't a Jew in an Arab land that had no place where to go you're a fat cat sitting around in America, then of course you can't appreciate it. And certainly somebody's going to tell you, it's treif, it's this, it's that. It was one of the greatest moments in Jewish history. You have to have no clout. The gift of Eretz Yisrael to Am Yisrael can only come through the Ribbono Shel Olam. Only through the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nobody else gives Eretz Yisrael to Klal Yisrael. There was a song we used to sing in Yiddish. You don't know Yiddish. All right. We're going to educate you. You don't know Yiddish. This was during the Second World War. Where will I go? Who will answer me? All the doors are closed. The whole world shut their doors on the Jewish people. Hey, 1948, Tavshin Chet. All of a sudden, every Jew in the world has a place to go to. And as far as the world is concerned, they thought that this state was going to be finished in a matter of a few days. Five armies invaded. That we survived and that we prevailed and that we were victorious with great losses, but we were victorious was a nez goli min hashamayim. This was the chaz de Hashem. There's a chi of yizbonin in chaz de Hashem. And you know what the purpose of yizbonin in chaz de Hashem is? To be mevarech mahalel lahalel shabbat. Take a look. Sometimes you say Ashrei three times a day. You know how many times you say in Ashrei asafra gudulosa b'chol yom avarachecha. I'm going to tell your nisim and your neflois. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? What are you saying in Ashrei? What are you going to say about Gavreshim? Tell me something good he did. What do you think we're talking about? We're talking about the nisim and neflois that he did for this people that the world had thought was finished. They thought it was all over. The curtain is coming down upon the history of the Jewish people. We had enough of them for the last 3,000 years. I'm always fond of I just thought about it now. What is it? There was a great British historian by the name of Sir Arnold Toynbee. Toynbee wrote 14 volumes, Story of the World. 14 volumes. And in these 14 volumes, he traced the history of 21 civilizations. 21. And each one of these civilizations, the pattern was the same. The 21 civilizations, and I can't remember the names of them, I think the half of them he made up anyway. Nobody would have known the difference. And here he traces all these 21 civilizations. There's always the period of infancy and growth and development and struggle and battle and expansion until the civilization peaks. And the moment that it peaks, what inexorably must begin is the decline, deterioration, the decay, and ultimately disintegration and disappearance. It happened with all the civilizations. Except one. The Jews were still around. What's he going to do with the fact that the Jews are still around? According to his theory of history, they should have gone the way of all the others. Nations keep coming. Nations keep going, passing like shadows, wiped off the earth. Thou an eternal witness remainest, bearing the message, God is but one. Egypt enslaved thee, Babylon crushed thee, Rome led thee captive, homeless thy head. Where are those nations, mighty and fearsome? Thou hast survived them. They are long dead. I didn't write it. It's a great poem. My Torah B'Das elementary school graduation, I recited that poem. They used to have a contest who's the best reciter. So the two finalists were me, I was one, with this poem, Israel, my people, God's greatest riddle, will thy solution ever be told? And the one I was competing against was a classmate of mine who recited Casey at the Bat. I mean, do you think he had a chance in the world of winning? I had them crying in the aisles. They were handing out Kleenex, you understand? Nations keep coming, passing like shadows, wiped off the earth. I want to tell you something else. I come by my Avas Eretz Yisrael very justifiably. After my father died about 20 years ago, his worldly possessions were a little suitcase, and the little suitcase was about a third full. I opened up the suitcase, and there were a number of envelopes, newspaper articles. He saved any newspaper articles about his three sons. Understand? So every so often we got ourselves into the paper. He loved that. Okay. And then I found in an old envelope. I open up the envelope. I read it. Didn't know about it during the course of his lifetime. I didn't have a clue. But here was a letter from the Jewish Agency for Palestine. It was dated August of 1946. August of 1946. Let me tell you what you've already gotten a bit of a picture then. Eretz Yisrael, there was fighting in the streets. There was war. The Jews were clamoring to get in. We're talking about a Jewish world that was in upheaval. And the letter said the following: Dear Mr. Gold, we have received your application and those of your wife and three sons to make Aliyah to Palestine. You have been approved for Aliyah to Palestine. However, at the present time, there are no certificates available. You know what certificates were? You had to get a certificate from the British government to give you a right to come into Eretz Israel. There are no certificates. So they say, but we hope, this was their great hope, we hope that someday in the future there will be enough certificates for all who want to come. Little did the fellow who wrote the letter understand that in 2 years' time we wouldn't need a fashlugin, a British certificate to get in to Eretz Israel. I remember I was after the ill-fated, tragic Oslo Accords, I was interviewed by the BBC. And they asked me, what is my opinion of these accords that have been signed between the Palestinians, the new Palestinians, and the State of Israel? So I told them, I'll tell you exactly what I think about it. This you should also know. In 1939, March of 1939, when everybody knew what Hitler was and what Hitler was doing to the Jews, the British issued an order saying that for the next 5 years, 15,000 Jews a year will be permitted into Palestine. After that date, no more Jews will ever be permitted into Israel. Do you hear the rishus? Is the rishus staggering the imagination? Close shut the doors of Eretz Israel. So I told the BBC, you remember your government issued a white paper in March of 1939? 10 years later, that white paper was on the garbage heap of history, a worthless piece of paper. I said, you know what's going to be with the Oslo Accords? In less than 10 years from now, it's going to be a worthless piece of paper and a garbage heap of history. My father had applied to go to Eretz Yisrael at such a time of such strife. And the Jewish Agency for Palestine couldn't even imagine that the day would come that all Jews would be permitted to come to Eretz Israel. You can't take for granted getting on a plane in New York and being here in 9 3/4 hours. That was not the story of Jewish history for 2,000 years before that. What is it? Rav Chaim Kain and Tosfos and Tzubos over there. Kuf Yud Amud Beis. Is it that the Sakonas Drachim, you can't go? They, who went? How many people? Come on. I tell you, there are a few people I'd love to be standing with on a main street in Jerusalem. The Ramban. The Ramban came here. He found two Jews living in Jerusalem. Two. He had to travel around the outlying areas to see if he can put together a minyan for Shabbos. The Bar Tanura, Rav Avadya Bar Tanura, came about 200 years later. Jerusalem was bursting at the seams. There were 200 Jews living in Jerusalem. Can you imagine standing with the Ramban and the Bar Tanura and Jerusalem? The traffic isn't moving. They're honking away. The place is jammed with Jews. They would say, Shomu Shamayim. Chazdei Hashem. Not two Jews in Yerushalayim. 750,000. You have to be able to look at the present in the light of the past. If you don't know the past, you don't have a clue of the Chazdei Hashem. Awesome. Awesome what has taken place over here. I feel I had a great schus that I came to learn here in Eretz Yisrael. You heard about it in 1955 and 1956. And the great chesed of my being here is the following. That anybody who gives me these stories, and I know them better than most of you. It's a secular state. The Mechal Shabbos, the Reifle Treifus. Some even eat Hetem Achira. That's the worst, you know. It's real bad. It's real bad over here. The matzav of Klal Yisrael is very bad. Understand? So I'm telling you that in 1955 you could count the number of yeshivas on one hand. You had Chevron and Geula. There wasn't even a Givat Mordechai altogether. You had the Mir. You had Panevish, Slabatka, and Vizhnitz. And in Kfar Sidim there was a tzrif where Rav Eli Lapian was saying Shmuzim. The awesome explosion and growth of the Torah world in Eretz Yisrael in the last 50 years is unprecedented and unequaled in all of Jewish history. And it happened right here in this secular anti-Jewish Medina. Isn't that wonderful? It should blow your mind. When I was in I learned this man in Yerushalayim. I made a cheshbon of 16 Americans in Jerusalem sitting alone. How many do you think there are now? I don't think you can find an Israeli in the 4,000 in the Mir. You know what we're talking about? Do you know what awesome ruchniistic growth has taken place in this country in the last 50 years? Everything I'm doing over here is I'm choosing. Go choose. Ah, go choose. One of the greatest moments, of course, was July 4th, 1976. What happened on July 4th, 1976? Don't be afraid. I won't yell at you. What happened on July 4th, 1976? What? I can't hear a word. What? Right. That was the centennial, the 200th year anniversary of America. Atzmaut, the Yom Atzmaut of America. I remember I went for my brother Oliver Shalom made a bar mitzvah in Worcester, Massachusetts. He was rabbi of Worcester, Massachusetts for 36 years. So I was there for the bar mitzvah of a nephew, and the fear and concern in the world about an Air France plane that had been hijacked to Entebbe in Uganda. What's going to be? Jewish lives were hanging in the balance. It was going on day after day. Will the Israeli government negotiate with them? Won't they negotiate? What's going to happen? So I remember it was after Shabbos. We were in my brother's house. Somebody came running in and says, "Something's happening, Rabbi. Something's happening." So put on the radio and the TV, and we started finding out what was happening. You should know the 200th celebration of America turned into a worldwide celebration of Eretz Yisrael. The raid at Entebbe. What a stroke, of great genius. But Hashgacha Pachatis, did it work? Did it succeed? The Rebbeinu was flying. The Rebbeinu was flying with them that night all the way to Africa and back. It was something that staggered the whole world. No people had ever done it. No people had done it before. None have done it since then. Nobody else is able to do it. Just plucked them all out and brought them to Eretz Yisrael. It was a whole day. We drove to New York, and they had the big ships on the Hudson. Very. And there was some little rowboat with an Israeli flag on it going through the Hudson. And tens of thousands of people were cheering. What about 67? What about 67? Who doesn't remember 67? But to appreciate it, you had to feel the tension, the fear that gripped Jews worldwide. The noose was tightening around Eretz Yisrael. Straits of Tehran are closed. All airlines stopped flying into Eretz Yisrael. A friend of mine, I was in yeshiva with, made it onto the last El Al flight out of the United States, the only ones who would fly. He wanted to make it back to Eretz Yisrael before war breaks out. There was a tension that could cut throughout the world. The Jewish world was. I remember we were raising money. I was then in the yeshiva in Toronto. Half the yeshiva, including me, we signed up at the embassy to serve in Eretz Yisrael, to take the place of soldiers who are going to go to the front. The fear. People saw Churban Bayit Shlishi before their very eyes. Churban Bayit Shlishi. I remember one of the things, sometimes I'm an emotional guy. One of the stories that appeared then in the paper in Canada was people were borrowing money from the bank in order to give to Eretz Yisrael. This fella came in, was in Toronto, he came into the bank and the manager says, what do you want this money for? He says, I want to give it to Israel. We don't have such loans over here. So he said, you know what I want? I want a home improvement loan. And the bank manager gave it to him. A home improvement loan. I get choked up every time I think of that. They gave it to him. Klal Yisrael was putting in their effort to save, and then to live through that week. Monday, war breaks out on Monday. By Tuesday, you hear about Tel Aviv is burning, Haifa is burning. Armies are invading Eretz Yisrael. It was Bashar a pachad oyo v'nora. And by Wednesday, everything is changing. No, you begin to find out. No. Everything you heard wasn't true. You got to read about the Six-Day War. Six-Day War was the Rabbeinu Shlalem at his best. A victory of such proportions. That's not the Rabbeinu Shlalem. There's no chiv over here of Yizbeinu Chazdei Hashem. Chazdei Hashem. That's what it all is. And then you can have people, people who make, who belittle it. It borders on Tefillah. Don't you see the Hashem? What happened to you? If one sees the Yad Hashem, then the least that one can do is thank the Rebbeinu Shlalem. I've always said there were one or two possibilities. One possibility is I don't say hello on Yom HaTzvah. No siri, not me. I'm not going to do that. The other possibility is I say Hallel on Yom HaTzmut with a bracha. You understand? With a bracha. One of two possibilities. Achamev Eskom Shana, I'm standing before the pearly gates, and the Rebbein Shem thunders at me and says, "You said hallel with Abracha on Yom Atzma? What, you crazy? You're out of your mind?" No problem. I stand up before God and say, "Listen, God, you did a great chesed for Klal Yisrael, and I thank you. Go to heaven." What's the second possibility? You didn't say hallel on Yom Atzmos. I don't understand you. You're out of your mind. What am I going to answer? What am I going to answer? Why didn't you thank me? Did I do something for you? Didn't do something for you? Go to hell. Mitzias. The Yizboninu Chazdei Hashem. There's a chiv of Yizboning Bechazdei Hashem. And if you are Yizboning Bechazdei Hashem, then you have a chiv to be Mahalon Meshabeh. By the way, I personally don't care if you say hello, if you don't say hello. I don't care if you say a bracha, if you don't say a bracha. As long as you thank God, whichever way you do, that's okay with me. I don't get hung up on these things. But know what the Rebbein Hashem has done. Know, be aware, thank Him. One of the great words of Hashkofa, and with this, I mean, I can keep talking about the history of, one of the great parts of Jewish history. Simultaneous with all of this, simultaneous, was the struggle for Soviet Jewry. Don't think there wasn't a tremendous amount of Chazdei Hashem. We year after year, day, who knows, 2, 4, 6, 8, open up the Iron Gate. Jews took on the greatest world power in history, the USSR. You understand? Jews took them on. And who would have ever believed that this mighty empire, the Russians, you understand, are going to crumble like a deck of cards? And it all came as a result of the Jewish struggle against Russia. It was an awesome the fall of Soviet Russia. And then all of a sudden, hundreds of thousands, millions of Jews that were unable to come to Eretz Yisrael were now able to come. Made a tremendous difference. I once heard a shmuz from Rabbi Avraham HaKohen Palm, Zecher Tzadik for Kadosh Levracha. I'm going to say it in very, not with all of the trappings that he said, but I think it's a very important hashkafa, and with that we will close. One of the psukim that was quoted by the Shari Tshuva Rabbeinu Yonah was V'yodato im levavecha, you should know in your heart, Tikasher yaseh ish et beno, as a man chastises his son, Hashem Elokecha miyasrecha, God, your God, chastises you. Rav Tam said, there's a corollary to that pasuk. The corollary to that pasuk is the following. What does a father do after a child has suffered? What does he do? You know what he does? He embraces him and begins the process of rebuilding the relationship. He pours out all of his love to let him know that I only have your best interests in mind. So Rav Pam said that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, after, it's a law in Jewish history, he said, that after every period of extreme suffering, there comes a period of an outpouring of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's chesed to the point where it's possible for it to be Yemos HaMashiach. And he pointed out four periods in Jewish history. I could speak at great length about each one of them, but I'm going to tell them to you simply, straight, to the point. The first is Sancheriv Melech Ashur. Sancheriv Melech Ashur has conquered the 10 tribes, sent them off into exile, destroyed 80 to 90% of Eretz Yisrael. He's now getting ready. He's getting ready now to conquer. He's getting ready now to conquer Yerushalayim. And we mentioned it before. He wants to conquer Yerushalayim. Tomorrow he's going to conquer Yerushalayim. And that night he's the entire army of Sancheriv is destroyed. That was the first great tragedy before the Sancheriv was destroyed. He had brought the worst korban upon Klal Yisrael up until that moment in history. 80% of Klal Yisrael torn away, sent off to who knows where in the world. All of Eretz Yisrael raised to the ground except Yerushalayim. And right there, chapter 11 in Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu talks about Mashiach. So he said, you know why? Because after a period of extreme suffering, then comes the great outpouring of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed, and he's ready to bring Mashiach. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rebbeinu Shem wanted to make Chizkiyahu Mashiach, and Sancheriv Gog u'Magog, but there was a chet, and it didn't work. The second period was the period of Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kochva. Rabbi Akiva said that Bar Kochva, Tein Malko Mashiach, he is Mashiach. And Kol Chachmei Doro, the Rambam says, all of the wise men of the generation said, yes, this man is Mashiach. Did he make a mistake? Did Rabbi Akiva make a mistake? It failed. The rebellion failed. Rambam said, you know why? You know why Rabbi Akiva thought that Bar Kochva was Mashiach? Because the suffering of Klal Yisrael under Rome had reached a point that it was impossible to continue anymore. Rome was brutal. Killed hundreds of thousands of Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Destroyed them. They said, hey. So that they felt that something has to happen. And they felt the footsteps of Mashiach, but according to the Yerushalmi, there was a chait there too. There was a chait, and it didn't happen. The third may be the most fascinating of them all. The middle of the 16th century, the Chachmei Tzfat, the Marit, the Mabit, Rav Shlomo Alkavitz, the Beis Yosef. You ever read L'cha Dodi? Next time you come to L'cha Dodi, read L'cha Dodi. You know what L'cha Dodi is? It is a shir that is talking about the anticipation of Mashiach. Migdash Melech Ir Melucha Kumitzi Mitocha Hafecha Ravlok Sheves Behemet Habacha Behu Yachmol Alay Echela Yerushalayim Arise Uri Uri Hit Odini. David Ben Yishai is coming. Ben Parzi, you got to read it. It's unbelievable. The Hoyolim Shisa Shosach. Yosus Alayach Ke'elokoyach Kimsos Chazan Al-Kala. Not only that, at that moment in history, you know what the Gedoli Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael did? They decided to renew the smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted to establish a Sanhedrin, something that was never done at any other period in time. Thus, Epis, this is what Klal Yisrael needed it done, Sanhedrin. Rabbi Yosef Karo received smicha, the Baal Shittim Kubetzes got smicha. So he says, you know why? Because they were the aftermath of one of the great tragedies that befell the Jewish people. 1492. The expulsion of Jews from Spain killed hundreds of thousands of Jews. Hundreds of thousands of others embraced Catholicism. All the Merkezei HaTorah were destroyed, and Jews were dispersed all over the world to start all over again. The depression that had come down upon the Jewish people was palpable. And the Chachmei HaKabbalah in Tzfat felt, something is going on now after a period of such suffering. The Rebbeinu Shem is going to pour out his goodness and his kindness to Klal Yisrael. Maybe we can bring the Mashiach now. And then Rav Tam said, the fourth period in history is obviously the Shoah and Hakamas Medinas Yisrael. After a tragedy like the Shoah, the Rebbein Shem had to pour out his kindness in a way unparalleled in Jewish history. The unparalleled chesed had to equal in some way the unparalleled tragedy. And that was the Rebbein Shem's gift to Klal Yisrael. The Rebbein Shem's gift. Not Ben Gurion's and not Herzl's. It was the gift of the Rebbein Shem. That was his embracing Klal Yisrael. I'm going to close. I had all sorts of ways to close, but I got a one word message from Rabbi Rachmiel, and I bow before Rabbi Rachmiel's superior wisdom. He wants me to tell you a story, one of my favorite stories. It's a story, I didn't even have it in my notes, Rabbi Rachmiel. I didn't even have it in my notes, but now it's there. It's one of the well, there are a lot of people that know this story, so now you should join the ranks of those who know it. I was rabbi in West Hempstead. Is anybody here from West Hempstead? Who are you?
Norbert.
Where do you live?
What?
Right near junior high school?
I was rabbi in West Hempstead, and I had taken a year sabbatical. I came with my family to Eretz Yisrael. And when we returned, I was offered a job in Eretz Yisrael, and then came the painful process of having to make a decision that, first of all, to leave such a wonderful community like West Hempstead. You'll report that back. Just tell them that I said that. It was very difficult leaving West Hempstead. And it was a very good position, and I liked what I was doing, and I liked the people. And the living was nice in West Hempstead. It was very, very nice. But here it is, that my whole life I've wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, and here it is, I'm offered a job. And finally, the moment of crisis comes. It was so, I'm telling you, it was so difficult. Big hero that I am, you understand? It was a very difficult decision to make. Very difficult. And then I finally get word from Eretz Yisrael that tomorrow morning I have to give an answer. So I want to tell you, I lived on Colonnade Road. Now, a few houses from me on Colonnade Road, there was a family of Balei Tshuva that moved in, and we had a great deal to do with them. We kashered their kitchen, we did all sorts of things. We came very close to them. They had a dog called Charlie. I don't like dogs. But Charlie somehow ingratiated himself. He'd see me on the street, you know, he'd come snuggling over here. I'd have to run into the house afterwards and wash myself and take a shower. But he liked me. He liked me. This is a dog with Derek Heretz, you understand? He knew what it means to be the rabbi. Anyway, one day, my neighbors down the block say, Rabbi, we're going on Aliyah. I said to them, what? You're going on Aliyah? Why are you going on Aliyah? I said, look, you know, we're here 5 years already, and we come to shul every week, and we listen to the Torah reading, and the Torah reading, all you hear about in Torah is Eretz Yisrael here, Eretz Yisrael there, the whole Torah is Eretz Yisrael. So what am I doing over here in West Hempstead? We're going on Aliyah. They told me that they're leaving Charlie with a foster family on the block. You know, it was very important. This was going to be an extremely difficult period of adjustment for Charlie. So, anyway, I used to go out and take a walk every night, I think, over a brush or a shear, you know, solve the world's problems, and I'd walk along Colonnade Road and down Evergreen and up here, up there, not far from yours. Yeah, okay. I'd be drinking Harum. And usually I'd meet Charlie with his foster parents, you know, and he'd come over and he'd snuggle and I'd pat him, and then everything would be fine. Comes the big night that I have to make the decision. Am I going with my family on Aliyah? Very difficult. I couldn't make the decision. I went out for my walk, and vihine, Charlie is coming with his foster parents. They say, Rabbi, you know, Rabbi, we got a call today from Israel. Charlie's going on Aliyah. They bought a ticket for him. That dog is going to go on Aliyah, and I'm not going to go? I turned around. I went into the house. I told my wife and family, we are going on Aliyah. That's exactly what we did. The Rebbeinu Shem sends messages in many different ways, but you have to be tuned in. And I tell you, if there's a heaven for dogs, Charlie Olivar Shalom, Schuso Yogan Elenu, is in that Gan Eden for dogs. I'm Makitov. Is Beninu Chazdei Charlie? Because Charlie Zachiti to have made the greatest move in our lives. We say it to ourselves often, nearly daily. It would have been the great tragedy of our lives if we would not have come to live in Eretz Israel. Easy? Not easy. How easy can it be when you have a whole slew of grandchildren that speak English with an Israeli accent? Oh, God. But we love them all. We love them all. Yes, and we're concerned like everybody else. We have one in the army now, another one going in a few months. They're all sitting and learning. Very big schuss. All of our grandchildren were born in Eretz Israel. My father would never believe it. My Zayde couldn't have dreamed of it. 2,000 years of Jews could never have imagined. They could hope, they could pray, they could not imagine the Chesed Hashem at this moment in history. So we have to thank the Rebbeinu Shem, and in thanking that Rebbeinu Shem, we are also fully aware of the terrible, terrible threats against this country. We are the most threatened country on the face of this earth. No other country is threatened with total nuclear destruction. And the world has not done much. By the way, that's par for the course. They will talk. Roosevelt called a number of conferences about refugees, but didn't take anybody in. Everything was closed. So therefore, you always have to remember, there's a duality in that Hallel. After we say Zeh Hayom, Osa Hashem, Nogilo V'nis Mechavo, the very next thing we say is Ona Hashem, Hoshiyana. Those are the two sides of Eretz Yisrael. The two sides of Eretz Yisrael are the great joy and the gift that the Rebbeinu Shem has given to us. At the same moment, we also have to say we know we depend completely on you, and therefore Ona Hashem, Hoshiyana. That we should be zeifer to be worthy of Chazdei Hashem, and that can only come through being mizbonein b'Chazdei Hashem, and to thank the Rebbeinu Shem for all that he has done, and know that we are totally dependent on him. Ein lanu al mi lishayin ela al avinu shabashmayim. Chag Sameach.